ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sadrisham cheshtate swasya prakriter jnanavanapi prakritin yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati sadrisham cheshtate swasya prakrite jnanavanapi prakritim yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati sadrisham cheshtate swasya prakrite jnanavanapi prakritin yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati. Even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature, for everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? You can translate it simultaneously. Purport. Unless one is situated on the transcendental platform of Krishna consciousness, he cannot get free from the influence of the modes of material nature, as it is confirmed by the Lord in the 7th chapter. Therefore, even for the most highly educated person on the mundane plane, it is impossible to get out of the entanglement of Maya simply by theoretical knowledge or by separating the soul from the body. There are many so-called spiritualists who outwardly posed as advanced in the science, but inwardly or privately are completely under particular modes of nature which they are unable to surpass. Academically, one may be very learned, but because of his long association with material nature, he is in bondage. Krishna consciousness helps one to get out of the material entanglement, even though one may be engaged in his prescribed duties in terms of material existence. Therefore, without being fully in Krishna consciousness, one should not give up his occupational duties. No one should suddenly give up his prescribed duties and become a so-called yogi or transcendentalist artificially. It is better to be situated in one's position and to try to attain Krishna consciousness under superior training. Thus one may be freed from the clutches of Krishna's Maya. I've taken up the this verse in particular as a lead-in to my answer to the question which I received via an email, which I'm paraphrasing, goes like this, that someone has a particular nature, fiery nature, or combative nature, from the very, very little I know about astrology, that would be called the strong influence of Mars or Buddha, fiery kind of. So tends to speak very strongly and is a devotee and likes to preach Krishna consciousness, but finds that by his speaking, even some people who have come to Krishna consciousness, they become discouraged and they may even go away. So the question is then, can we not engage our propensities in preaching of Krishna consciousness? Propensities, this is of course an English word, in the verse which we just read, the word is used prakriti, which means nature. The English word nature can mean, or has several meanings. The one that describes one's personality and one's propensities, the sum total of all of this, the word that's usually used is swabhava, one's own bhava, or one's own, literally we could say feelings or mindset. At the beginning of the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks of two very broad categories of natures. Elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, he describes different natures in terms of three divisions, sattvaguna, rajaguna, and tamaguna. And he, at the beginning of the 16th chapter, Lord Krishna describes, well, out throughout the 16th chapter, but at the beginning he gives a summary of the divine and the demoniac natures. So someone may be of divine nature. Generally, someone of the divine nature will be situated in sattva-guna, although he may have traces of lower gunas. Someone in the demoniac nature, generally they won't be so much in sattva-guna, but it's possible also. So I'll just read the first three verses of Bhagavad Gita, which describes qualities which are very suitable in Krishna consciousness. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Abhayam Sattva Sangshudhir Jnana Yoga Vivastitihi Danang Damascha Yagyascha Svadhyayastapa Arjavam Ahimsa Satyam Akrodhastyaga Shantir Apaishunam Daya Bhuteshva Loluptvam Mardavam Hriyara Chapalam Teja Kshama Teja Kshama Dhriti Shocham Adroho Nati Manita Bhavanti Sampadam Daivim Abhijatasya Bharata. Among these qualities, this the first one, fearlessness, that is a quality which we'll see in a strong preacher. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger. Well, does that go with strong speaking? Renunciation, tranquility, does that go with strong speaking? Aversion to fault-finding? I have to consider this very carefully. Compassion for all living entities, that should certainly be the central component of the personality of a preacher of Krishna consciousness. Freedom from covetousness, that means wanting to, freedom from the propensity to want to accumulate more and more, whether it be dhanam or janam or sundarim. Gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. Then the demoniac nature, dambho darpo bhimanas cha krodha parusham evacha agyanam cha bhijatasya partha sampadam asurim. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Pritha. So divine nature is very suitable to engage in devotional service, all these qualities. The demoniac nature is not very suitable, and someone of demoniac nature can also take to devotional service, especially in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. But it requires a purification, a complete change of outlook. Now Krishna says here, nigraha kim karishyati, what can repression accomplish? This is the chapter on Karma Yoga. Later, Lord Krishna will describe the process of Dhyana Yoga, which is outlined in the Yoga Sutras of Rishi Patanjali. The Ashtanga Yoga, the process includes the endeavor to switch off the sanskaras. The sanskaras means the impressions within the consciousness from everything, everyone, everything that a person has done and thought and perceived in this life and in countless lives prior to this. So these sanskaras, they mold our consciousness. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. According to what we associate with, that in that way our desires develop. These sanskaras are impression in the mind. There are innumerable impressions, and for every person they are different, and thus we get different personalities. In some personalities, boldness will be prominent. In others, cowardice, meekness, for instance. There are many different qualities. But the intent in the Ashtanga Yoga system is to be completely free from these, the effects, from all mental activity. Yoga, what is that? Yoga, chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga, according to Patanjali, is the stopping, nirodha, stopping, the obstruction of all activities of the consciousness. So it's an attempt to just stop it. Just like the car is driving, put on the brakes, stop it. But it's very difficult to stop the mind. Anyone want to try? We can have a 5-second try. Just, it's not possible. Either consciously or even subconsciously, the mind is always going on. We may say, well, when I go to sleep, then I stop thinking. But actually the thought processes continue, even though we may not be aware of them. But the attempt to just stop all activities of the conscious is a very difficult and prolonged process. And in bhakti, we don't even want to do that, because our aim is to Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite, to engage all the senses in the service of Krishna. In Karma Yoga, this chapter from which this verse is read, this Sadrishang Cheshtate Swasyaha, this verse. In Karma Yoga and in Bhakti Yoga, the attempt is to engage the nature which one has presently acquired, to engage a person according to their nature, according to the prescriptions of Shastra, for the sake of purification. Kayena manasa bhudya yoginam karma kuravanti. Now I'm forgetting the verse. What is that verse? Kayena manasa bhudya kaivalaya indraya rapi yoginam karma kuravanti. Sangam tyaktva manish. Sangam tyaktva atma shuddhaye. The yogis, this is a description of the karma yogis in particular, they engage their body, kayena, manasa, buddhya, the mind and the intelligence, and even the senses. They engage them performing work. Kuravanti means they're not performing the work. This particular form of the verb means they're not performing the work for their own sake, but for some other purpose. And that purpose is to give up all attachment to this world, to the fruits of the activity and to this world, everything for the sake of purification. And those karma yoga and bhakti yoga, they are of course to be performed according to the direction of the shastra. So whatever situation one is in, whatever previous nature one has acquired, one that can be engaged for the sake of purification. But that doesn't mean that demoniac tendencies can be indulged. If someone has some wrong propensity in the name of purification. Srila Prabhupada once told a story of a thief who joined a party of people who were going on pilgrimage. So it was his nature, it was his habit to steal, to get up at night and steal. So he got up at night, as usual, when he was on the pilgrimage party, but he thought, it's not good, I'm going on pilgrimage, I shouldn't steal, but I have this strong desire to steal. So he took all the people's clothing and bedding, he took them and moved them somewhere else. So in the morning, everyone got up and said, oh, what happened? All our things. So I said, no, it's not stolen, but they're just all over here. I'm a thief. And I just couldn't help myself, but I didn't really steal it. It's you can get it all over here. we find Jagai and Madhai, they were highly sinful persons. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivered them from their sinful life, but he told them, you can be delivered, you'll get the mercy, my mercy, but you have to agree not to sin anymore. So sinful propensities are not at all conducive for devotional service. A very expert preacher or guru can engage someone of demoniac propensity in Krishna consciousness. But that's not for everyone. Just like who is it? Tiramangai Alva engaged thieves and cheaters. He was able to engage them in activities that were not normally considered good. Stealing. That was for a particular purpose. And then he, when the purpose was fulfilled, he drowned them in the water of the Kaveri, which is not, that's not for everyone. That's not for every guru to engage thieves and then kill them. This is not the kind of story we're going to tell people that how bhakti is all good. They won't understand this. But he purified them by doing that. Their propensity was engaged. But in general, such propensities are not very good to engage in devotional service. Theoretically, one could do bank robberies and engage the money for Krishna's service. And that would be, from the point of view of bhakti, if we take the philosophy without any practical considerations, it's quite proper to do so, because everything belongs to Krishna. And the banks, they don't recognize that. And they should do, but they don't, so take it from them forcibly and engage in Krishna service. Philosophically, it's fine, but practically, it's not at all, because for various reasons, one of them being that you'll probably not engage the money in Krishna service, you'll end up in prison, you'll get caught. And another reason is that it encourages people to do acts which are basically antisocial in the name of bhakti. Then people may say, well, okay, I can, in it for bhakti, I can steal money, but they'll just use the name of bhakti and steal for their own sense gratification. This is the danger with yukta vairagya in less drastic forms also. And of course, the name, then devotees will get a very bad name. And so for various reasons, we do not at all encourage doing bank robberies or any other kind of robbery, even though the banks themselves are robbing, but that's in a manner which somehow is considered legal, proper, and respectable. It can be that someone's a devotee, but they have other motives also. This is directly mentioned in Shastra. There are devotees in various modes of nature. Those who are devotees but still very much influenced by the mode of ignorance. Those who are devotees but still very much influenced by the mode of passion. And those who are devotees who are very much influenced by the mode of goodness, which still isn't completely pure. Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport, there are many karmis in the dress of devotees. That's a heavy statement, isn't it? There are many, many karmis in the dress of devotees. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead can detect their purpose. The karmis want to use the property of the Lord for their selfish sense gratification, but a devotee endeavors to use the Lord's property for God's service. Therefore, a devotee is always distinct from the karmis, although the karmis may dress like devotees. So it may be that someone is a devotee and in their own mind they think that, well, I'm doing everything for Krishna, but they don't even see or recognize their own personal desires, they do desire dhanam, janam, sundarim. They have material desires, but they use the whole process of devotional service to engage their material desires and pretending to themselves and to others that they are not doing so. The Lord's property, well, we could say even one's own nature, that is the particular nature that one has acquired at the present time from the modes of nature, that is supposed to be used solely for Krishna's pleasure. So one should engage one's propensities solely for Krishna's pleasure. There are Shastric prescriptions. We're talking about engaging one's nature. Shastric prescriptions are restraints from engaging in demoniac propensities. There are some Shastric prescriptions which allow meat eating, gambling, intoxication, and what appears to verge on illicit sex. But that's not meant for people of very high consciousness. So exactly which Shastric prescriptions we are to follow, not ones that allow us to engage in dambho, darpo, bimanascha, in the demoniac propensities. It may be that one is very elevated by pious activities, but still have a not very elevated mindset or consciousness. We have in the Bhagavatam the narration of Indra, who, to get that position of Indra, he must have performed so many pious activities. But still, he has the prominent propensity, it seems, to enjoy others' wives. He disrespected his guru, because his basic outlook is how to enjoy this world, which is basically demoniac. So even though he's a divine, he's Deva, Devaraj, king of the Devas, still he is as if overpowered by very low propensities. Another major characteristic of persons of demoniac nature is that they don't like to observe the Shastric prescriptions, which are meant to control such or such demoniac propensities. Pravritting cha, nivritting cha, janana vidura asuraha. na shocham na pichacharo na satyam teshu vidyate. Such persons, they don't distinguish between what is proper to do and what is improper to do. They don't know that, although they may have theoretical knowledge of Shastra. They're not clean, they don't behave properly according to Shastra, and they're not truthful, even though superficially they may follow Shastra. Krishna again warns at the end of that chapter that ya Shastra vidimutsraja vartate karma karataha nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukam naparam gatim. Without following the injunctions of Shastra, if one simply acts whimsically, he cannot attain a perfection or happiness or the supreme destination. So the demoniac, they don't believe in following the Shastras, and even if they do follow the Shastras, they may do it in a superficial way. What is that? That stated, they perform sacrifices in name only, but without the real spirit of personal sacrifice. So this verse, that what can repression accomplish? Nigraha kim karishyati. One acts according to one's nature. Does it mean that everyone's just stuck in their present position and that no one can become, no one should change or even try to change? Someone might say, oh, you don't get up in the morning for Mangalati. Oh, it's my nature, Prabhu. It's my nature to sleep till 9 o'clock every morning. Well, that may be your conditioned nature, but one accepts the path of devotional service to become purified. There are so many books for self-improvement, especially in the modern age. We see personality development, for instance, and how to get ahead, how to win friends and influence people, think and grow rich, the 7 habits of highly effective people. These are all self-improvement books, but Bhagavad Gita is the ultimate self-improvement book. In other words, the idea is that, well, I'm in this situation now, I want to be in a better situation. There are different books to show you how to come to a better situation. And the best of all such self-improvement books is the Bhagavad Gita. So when Krishna says that everyone has to act according to their nature, it doesn't mean that one makes no endeavor for personal improvement. Otherwise, what's the meaning of Bhagavad Gita? If Arjuna says, well, I can't see any good in this fighting. What is that? Nacha shreyam anupashyami. I can't see anything good here. Therefore, na yotsya, I won't fight. And Krishna says, oh, okay, well, that's your nature. Okay, have a good holiday and I'll drive the chariot because I said I'd drive your chariot. If you're not here, I still have to drive it because you're not here. But anyway, see you later. Have a good holiday. He didn't say that to Arjuna. He said, no, you have to become, you have to understand what you're doing here. You have to become purified. Your consciousness is polluted by thinking such. The Bhagavad Gita is meant for personal improvement. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches us that we should know one's own position and intelligently try to improve oneself. In other words, you can't just repress your nature. You just can't change overnight from being whatever one's situation is in under the modes of material nature and suddenly become a perfect, pure devotee. It is possible, but it's unusual. It's generally the process of self-improvement is taken as a gradual one, which Krishna, he offers that in Bhagavad Gita, that you should always think of me. If you can't do that, well, follow the rules and regulations to attain me. He offers various programs of improvement if one can't immediately improve. So one may not be able to immediately just change one's nature and just repress one's present propensities, one should know one's present position and act intelligently to improve oneself. The example is given in Shastra of the caterpillar. It's used for going from one life, one body to another. The caterpillar transports itself from one leaf to another by capturing one leaf before giving up the other. So in other words, if you the caterpillar you'll see going from one leaf to another, he has part of his body on one leaf and then gradually raises the front part of his body, puts it, the front part of the body on another leaf, moves forward a little bit, and then lifts the back portion of his body up, and then in this way drags it forward. In other words, he doesn't leave one leaf before he's firmly situated in another. So this example is given for transmigration of bodies, but it's also very suitable in the context. Oh, there's another example in this regard. These are both from the text of the Bhagavatam. Just as a person traveling on the road rests one foot on the ground and then lifts the other, or as a worm on a vegetable transfers itself to one leaf and then gives up the previous one, the conditioned soul takes shelter of another body and then gives up the one he had before. So this can be used. This example can also be used that one's in a certain situation, one wants to go to another situation, so he starts to situate himself in that situation. When he's well situated in that situation, he becomes, he gives up the old one. So this idea that one cannot immediately give up one's present conditioning, Krishna is speaking this in the context of karma yoga. Karma yoga is executed according to the divisions of varna in varnashram society. We don't have that at the present time, and even previously in India, still going on to some extent, there was the caste system, but it was based on birth, not on qualities, although often the two coalesce. But the idea is that if one has the nature of a brahmana, he should act as a brahmana. If one has the nature of a kshatriya, should act as a kshatriya. If one has the nature of a vaishya, should act as a vaishya. And if one has the nature of a shudra, should act as a shudra. If one tries to do work that he's not fit for, it won't be very successful. Just like a brahmana may be very good in study, but not very good in business. A vaishya may be very good in business, but not very intellectually competent. So we can see that within our Krishna Conscious Movement also. Sometimes someone may be a very good preacher, but not a very good manager. Or they may be an excellent manager, but not have much idea about preaching. So the whole temple is run very nicely and efficiently, but there's no preaching spirit because the leader doesn't have any preaching spirit. So this whole varnashram system is meant for acting within one's present situation and at the same time dovetailing one's work, offering it all into Krishna's service. Svakarmana tamabhyacha siddhim vindati manavaha. By following his propensities and worshipping me, Krishna says, every man can achieve perfection. So there's this idea of dovetailing. Even bad propensities can be dovetailed into Krishna's service. Narottam Das Thakur sings, Kama Krishna Karma Arpane. We have so many desires, but we should dovetail them into Krishna's service. For instance, someone may have a desire to be very rich. So he may try to become very rich, but with the specific purpose of using all the money in Krishna's service. Krodha bhakta dveshi jane. Anger. If one has a tendency to become angry, then one should become angry at persons who are inimical toward Vaishnavas. Lobha sadhu sange harikatha. Lobha. If one is greedy, so what should you do? Accumulate lots and lots of money and give it to Krishna. Well, Narottam Das doesn't say that. Because what usually happens, we say, yes, I'm accumulating money. I'll give it to Krishna later, and it's always later. Yeah. So, lobha, one's greed, Narottam says, should be for associating with devotees, hearing topics of Krishna in the association of devotees. Moha, being illusioned, that is acceptable in devotional service. How is that? Moha, ishtalabha bina. If I don't get my desire, or my the service of my Lord, then I'll become bewildered. In other words, one will become distraught if one doesn't get, if one doesn't have the service of Krishna. Mada Krishna gunagane. This intoxication. One should be, intoxication is very good in devotional service. They say no intoxication. Here Narottam says, yes, intoxication, but that intoxication should be for singing the glories of Krishna. Niyukta karibo jata tata. He says, I will engage these propensities in these various ways. We see not only individuals, but even whole nations or peoples, they may have certain propensities. Of course, it's a broad generalization. But we do see that the tendency to become Krishna conscious, it, generally speaking, we can say, it is considerably more prominent among people raised in India than among people raised in, for instance, Japan. So that is something conducive. If one has that propensity to chant Hare Krishna, or a propensity to at least be favorable toward that, that's something very good in devotional service. The German people are famous for working hard and very efficiently, very concentratedly. They're very, very much concerned with work and quality. And that's very good if someone becomes a devotee, if he has that background, if they can engage that propensity in Krishna's service. I've not been to the Philippines, but I've heard that people there, they love to sing and dance, and they'll join our kirtans, and they'll be happy. But it's so they love to take to devotional. We won't find many Germans taking to devotional service. No, we have to work hard, and so they're not much interested. They don't have that much piety to take to Krishna consciousness. But we find, so I'm told, in the Philippines, many people like chanting and dancing and take out Krishna consciousness, but it's easy come, easy go. They very easily take it up and they can very easily leave it also. These, of course, are all broad generalizations. Among the various denominations of Christians, we find that persons from Roman Catholic and Orthodox Christian backgrounds, they tend to take to Krishna consciousness more easily because the whole outlook among Roman Catholics and Orthodox Christians, the whole culture is considerably closer to that of bhakti than that of Protestant Catholicism. So one's background or the cultural propensities that one has imbibed in this lifetime, that can very much influence one's taking devotional service, and even after taking devotional service can influence how we practice devotional service and what is our dedication and what is our attitude in devotional service. So dovetailing our nature is required in Krishna consciousness. We don't really have any other choice. We just can't change our nature overnight. But however, Krishna consciousness is a process of purification, of purifying our nature from the lower propensities, of fixing the mind on Krishna in loving devotional service. So therefore, we should be more concerned with Shastric directives such as Trunadapi Sunichena Tarorivasihishnuna Amanina Amanadena Kirtaniya Sadaharihi. We should be more concerned with this than with dovetailing our propensity. In other words, this Trinardapi verse, it's Lord Chaitanya's key advice that one who is more, one who considers himself lower than grass, who is actually more tolerant than a tree, who has no desire for being personally honored, and who is always happy to give honor to others, such a person can chant the holy name. We should chant the holy names of the Lord, of Hari, constantly. So this personality purifying instruction, we find again and again and again and again. And the idea of dovetailing, that's a concession. That's not the essence of devotional service, that we dovetail our propensity. Ultimately, whatever propensities we have in this life, they are some covering over our original propensity to love and serve Krishna. So dovetailing is a concession. It's not the essence. It's to be understood that whatever stage we're at, we have to study at that stage. We have to act for purification. But that means we have to start to make changes in our life, in our attitude, and everything. And there are limits to dovetailing also. For instance, if someone is a butcher, so I'm a butcher, how can I engage that in devotional service? You can't. Or I'm a contract killer. That means you make your living by taking contracts to kill people. Okay, you go shoot this person and you'll get 5,000 rupees. It's probably gone up. I heard in Mathura district, for 5,000 you could have someone shot dead. That was a few years ago. It's probably gone up since then. So these things can't be engaged in devotional service. There might be some time in society where there's a war going on, great turmoil, in which contract killing, if you just stretch your imagination, it could possibly be engaged there, but that would be called apadharma, in an emergency situation, not in a normal situation. It can't be engaged in Krishna service. Pedophilia, sexually abusing children, there's no way to engage such very bad propensities in Krishna service. So you may say, again, give the example of Tirumangai Alva. Yeah, but that was for a particular situation under a suitable and a very expert guide who was, by his high level of Krishna consciousness, was able to give devotional benefit to his disciples who engaged in activities which would normally be considered very sinful, criminal, antisocial. There's a getting a little bit off, or it was slightly tangential here. There's a disciple of mine. Disciple of mine, who abandoned his wife, who's also a disciple of mine, even though there's no good reason for his doing so. And about myself, he's not in contact with myself, and I hear that he says about myself that, well, I don't feel any connection with my guru. And he's interested in following very high levels of Krishna consciousness. He likes to hear about pastimes of the gopis with Krishna. He wants to get into higher Krishna consciousness. But you can't just abandon basic dharma or human principles and say, and go to some higher level. What I understand, it's his nature to be Hare Krishna. It's impossible. It's impossible, at least in India it seems, to get people to turn their phones off in the class. If anyone has not yet switched their phone off, please do so now. No one does so, and after a few minutes again. It doesn't apply to me. I'm above this. So what I understand, it's his acquired nature to be irresponsible. But he can't, well, it's just my nature, that's all. I left my wife and child, and just my nature to be irresponsible. But that irresponsible nature, that will degrade him. I read many years ago, it stuck in my mind, that some British troops, they were in Malta, which is a small island in the Mediterranean Sea, and they raped some local woman, and they pleaded, well, we were drunk. We didn't know what we were doing. Is that an excuse? Someone may kill someone while he's driving. Oh, I was drunk. It wasn't my fault. But you shouldn't have become drunk. It's no excuse. So one may acquire a certain nature, but it's one's duty to elevate oneself. Udharedatmanatmanam. One should raise oneself up by the mind. Natmanam avasadiyet. One should not allow oneself to become degraded by the mind. You'll have to suffer. I'm a devotee, I'm discussing gopi leelas. You'll have to suffer. You'll be punished for your sinful activities. You can't say, I'm a devotee, there's no sinful activity for me. That's that one becomes not only sinful, but one becomes an offender to the holy name. If one thinks that I can commit sins on the strength of my devotion. What's the devotion? Where's the devotion, actually? And there are others also, just a wife, married, and then, I'm not interested. And no good reason. If the wife is sinful and running off with other men, but then she may be abandoned. But otherwise, to abandon a faithful and chaste wife, that's stated in Shastra. That if, in the Narada Smriti, it's stated that if a man leaves a wife who is obedient, well-spoken, skillful, virtuous, and the mother of sons, he should be reminded of his duty, and if he doesn't change, he should be severely punished by the king. Then from Parashara Smriti, if a man forsakes an undefiled, undegraded wife in the prime of her youth, he shall be born as a woman in 7 successive births and suffer widowhood each time. So one may say, well, this doesn't apply to Vaishnavas. You say, I'm a Vaishnava, so I can do it either. But it's even worse if you're a Vaishnava, because then if you're abandoning a good Vaishnavi wife, it becomes a great offense. There are so many examples. There's one person taking to devotional service, very difficult personality, expects the... You see this in children. They seem to expect that the whole world is supposed to revolve around them. The baby's hungry and rah, and expects the mother will come running, which she does. But if one at the an adult is supposed to consider others also, not just, I want this now. Why isn't everyone cooperating with me? Why are you doing this to me? Very selfish, self-centered, arrogant. And devotees, they don't want to deal with that person. They say, no, you should accept me as I am. Just accept me as I am. I'm like this. I'll chant Hare Krishna and be like this. And you should just accept it. So then how can such a person be purified? First of all, one has to accept that one has some fault. I gave a lecture some time ago talking about leaders who are like monsters. They get in some situation and they just act in such a way that others become... They become turned off by them. And there was one disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, very expert in Shastra, in one of the best, which is really saying something, among the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Even the best scholar in ISKCON would maybe be up to the level of an average disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And their scholars are really very, 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 very scholarly. Sannyasi, but he hardly had any disciples because he was so hard on them that no one could live with him, no one could stay with him. Eventually, that one disciple who stayed with him, he stayed with him. Then Guru died. He was the only disciple left. He got the ashram, which is what he wanted. And then his wife moved in after that. He continues to wear saffron, but he lives with a woman who he's not married to, just like a wife. And other Gauriya Math people are scandalized, but he doesn't care. He got what he wanted. He tolerated being chastised 3 times a minute in the harshest words by his guru for so many years, and he inherited the ashram. So now he's got an ashram. People come, they give pranami. He has his wife, although she's not married to her. Well, there's really an example of karmis in the dress of devotees. He's not just... But anyway, I was saying in the some may have a propensity to be very strong, and that's, in one sense, that's glorious if used in devotional service, but it can be counterproductive also. Misbehavior cannot be passed off as my conditioning. Or the other thing, people say, oh, I'm special, I'm very special. You see, I can do things. I can associate with other people's wives because I'm special. See, this is preaching. I'm helping them. Don't judge me like ordinary. I'm special. But one cannot misbehave and just say it's my conditioning. All right, it's your conditioning, but you have to improve. One has to change. Change is required. Some devotees sincerely want to serve, but they can't recognize that, they can't seem to recognize that they have certain kind of severe conditioning which they require to overcome. They have to improve. And so they go on engaging their propensity, but by engaging their propensity, they don't become purified and others become disturbed. In Kali Yuga, mostly people have more demoniac propensities. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Dino hino joto chilo, hariname udharilo. He saved the fallen, the very fallen and lowly, by Harinam Sankirtan. But we should recognize that, yeah, we do. We have a tendency towards devotion, but we may also have some demoniac or anti-devotional propensities which are not helpful in devotional service. The demoniac outlook, Ishvaro Ham Aham Bhogi. The demoniac person thinks, I am the controller, I'm just like God. I am the enjoyer. Now we find also among the Kshatriyas, it's also mentioned one of their qualities of a good Vedic Kshatriya is Ishvara Bhava. He feels himself to be the controller. So how is it demoniac in one sense, and encouraged in another sense? Because Ishvaroham Hambhogi, if one thinks I'm the controller and I'm the enjoyer, that's demoniac. But if one has the feeling that I'm controlling, but as a servant of the Supreme Lord, not that I am personally meant to enjoy all this, then that is very suitable in devotional service. It's required also that there are devotees who can take charge and lead others and control others. That can be very well engaged in devotional service. Oh, but one may have the desire to control others but not be very good at it. And one should recognize that or be prepared to be told that by others also. That Prabhu, you want to do this service, but just face it. You're not. It's not good for you or for others. I know myself. I was doing direct management for many years in Krishna consciousness, and at some point I thought I should really get out of this because it's not good for me or good for others. I don't seem to be doing so very well. Now, engaging one's nature in preaching, well, first of all, one should understand what is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We encourage everyone to be preachers, but first of all, we should understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, Siddhanta. And what is the aim of preaching? Well, the aim of preaching seems fairly clear, is to bring people to Krishna consciousness. But then we have to understand what Krishna consciousness is. It is not just collecting people and putting tilak on them. Well, there are various levels of Krishna consciousness, but ultimately we want to bring everyone to pure devotional service. So that should be the first thing. This devotee was disappointed because I'm speaking strongly and people are going away. Well, it may be that one has to adjust one's style in preaching. That people go away is not necessarily a bad thing. It may be sorting out the sincere from the insincere. But it may be also that if we are a bit more tolerant of others, their mistakes, that they won't go away and they'll stay and they'll gradually become purified and they can make advancement. But if they go away, then how can they make any advancement? So strong speaking, that is good. I wrote a whole book about that, on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. But if as a result our preaching is not expanding, people aren't coming to Krishna consciousness, they're not becoming purified, then what is the actual benefit of that? On the other hand, if we're increasing the number of devotees exponentially, but none of them have a very clear idea of devotional service, if we compromise the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, so as to make it more palatable for materialistic people, then we may engage them in activities of devotional service, but they may go on with misconception of devotional service and they don't actually become purified. So it may be something like an upper sampradaya. Just on the way back from the program last night, I was discussing how the lecture I'd given it could be taken as an example of that. I spoke the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita clearly and straightforwardly, without any compromise. So it was strong speaking. This material world is miserable. Even if someone's in the position of the chief minister, respected, famous, rich, what was the other adjective I used? Something like that. Popular. But still one has to suffer the miseries of disease and old age. So I didn't compromise the philosophy in any way, but at the same time, unless there were staunch followers of the chief minister there, it wasn't that it was people felt upset or insulted or went away. In some of the lectures I give, it may be like that, but that was an example in my opinion. I might not be the best person to judge my own speaking, of speaking clearly and strongly and straightforwardly, but in a manner that the people in general who were attending, we hope they will be more inclined to take up Krishna consciousness and not become disgusted at it. Of course, that's a very great discussion, but there's just some idea from that lecture last night. Now, one can be strong in speaking, but one should also be aware of one's position. If one's nature is to be highly critical of others, that can be used in devotional service, but one makes the... it's very risky, because one can make offenses also. It's not... To point out something is wrong isn't in and of itself an offense. But there are ways of doing that also, just like there was some criticism of some drama, and you know, we're going to clean out all this bogus things from devotional service and a pure devotional service. If you see there's something wrong, then you don't have to presume that the person who you perceive is doing something wrong is a deviant who's out to spoil everything and I'm going to put it right. You could discuss it with others and see how to correct the devotee. It's not that everyone who makes some mistake, even a philosophical mistake, is someone who's just completely a demon. There may be ways of correcting them also. In other words, not necessary. One may have this strong nature, but it's not necessary every time or desirable every time to become very strong like this. There's another disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who I knew. I met him several times, and he would regularly. He actually had quite a few disciples, sannyasi. And he would get so heavy, he'd shout and say, I mean, really, really extremely heavy things. And his disciples weren't bothered at all. They didn't take him seriously. It's just, if someone's always, rah, 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 they're always, if you're always very, very heavy, then people tend to not, oh, it's just, they don't take you seriously. Whereas someone who speaks little, but when they speak, it's very meaningful. I know that from, I've heard from the GBC meetings also, that there's one of the leaders, he speaks very little, but whenever he speaks, everyone takes him very seriously because they know he's very thoughtful and not speaking from the platform of emotion, but when he speaks, it means he's thought about the issue very carefully. So when engaging our propensity in preaching, well, we have to be careful, because if our propensity is such that we have this tendency to become very strong in this and that, we have to be careful, because we're dealing with people's lives and how they advance in Krishna consciousness. So it's not that I have to indulge my nature. That's not the first consideration. The first consideration is how others are going to be benefited. I might have this nature, I want to, you're wrong, I have to blast you. Even, you know, devotees who are much senior to you, this is all wrong. That also can become a transgression of Vaishnava etiquette. One may see that one devotee who's senior to him is doing something wrong, but if you point it out in a very aggressive way, then you may be doing something wrong by that pointing it out also in that manner. So, very strong nature, it's good to you. We need people, we need strong preachers, we need committed preachers in Krishna consciousness. But there has to be a very, very strong spiritual component, not that we're just we have a certain nature and we require to vent that out. And then it becomes childish, just like the child is screaming. Hey, the child is screaming. So you don't bother. But if a person, when they're elder, they become older and they're still acting on the platform of emotion without considering others, their duty, what Krishna wants, or they may be considering all those things and think that I have some kind of divine right to indulge my nature. But you have to, again, you have to see the result. That you might think, this knowledge that we have, it's very, very powerful knowledge of Krishna consciousness. And within the culture that we live in, many people, they give great respect to sadhus, or people who speak on spiritual knowledge. Last night at the program, so many people coming and bowing down to me and offering respect. Not exactly because I speak on Krishna consciousness. If I'd spoken complete nonsense, as many swamis do, that or so-called swami, yes, everything is nothing, and nothing is everything, and you are within everything, and you have to realize this, and you become God. I could have gotten on the stage last night and said that, and if it had been completely fresh crowd, they would have thought, oh, very, very good spiritual teaching, very good, Swami, and bow down towards Swamiji. Oh, wonderful Swamiji, very, very high level of realization, complete nonsense. They'll bow down because they have that piety to do so. We can base our preaching on dovetailing people's piety, that, oh, they like to follow a Swami. Give out posters of myself and ask people to worship the poster every day and give badges of myself. Let them become attached to me, and then they'll chant Hare Krishna, and it's good for them. So that's one kind of preaching, but really we have to take people beyond that sentiment is good. It can be engaged. It's better than being anti-devotional, but it's not a good policy to base our whole preaching on it. There should be clear speaking of the truth. So if we get many people, we speak and people, they say, oh, very good Swamiji, and come and respect us. We may think, oh, now I became such a great preacher. But we have to see that how people are actually being changed is not such an easy thing. We may think, now I'm going to preach, and thousands of people are going to come, and it's going to be a huge thing. And what's wrong with all these people? Why can't they preach? I'll show them how to preach. And this. But when we actually preach and say, it's not such an easy thing to change people's deep-rooted attachments. So it requires not only enthusiasm, not only determination, but a lot of patience also to go on. As people come into devotional service, many take it up, they go away, or they take it up, but they don't come up, they remain on some low platform. It becomes very difficult to engage them. It's really not so easy to bring people into pure devotional service. So strongly speaking is a factor in preaching, which we certainly saw in Srila Prabhupada. But we also saw that he gave so much care and guidance and training moment after moment to get people to come and bow down before you is one thing, but to get them to commit themselves year after year, not such an easy thing. So preaching requires patience, waiting for Krishna's mercy, like Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada had a great vision of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, but it didn't happen very quickly. When he was in Vrindavan before he went to America, he was speaking, I want to go to America and preach and change the world. And people thought, they were respectful, oh, Swamiji, but they thought, he's a little cracked. Really? Yeah, what's he talking about? Going to America and making American Vaishnavas. Okay, Swamiji, very nice. Dandavat, Swamiji. But they didn't take it seriously. And he tried to get so many people to sponsor him to go overseas. No one took him seriously. Eventually he got Sumati Muraji to sponsor him. She also didn't think, you know, the Swamiji, he's so determined. All right, why don't you stay in Vrindavan? No, I have to go as my guru. Okay, it's nothing for her. She has a guest cabin on the ship. So, okay, you go. It's all right. You want? Yeah, okay, you can go. She didn't expect anything to come of it. No one expected. But it didn't happen. Just Prabhupada went there and said, got off the ship and said, Sarvadhaman Parijaja, and thousands of people ran up and bowed down before him and said, yes, Swamiji, we want to be your disciple. Didn't happen like that at all. Nothing like that. They just lost the power, it seems. Hare Krishna. Huh? Hare Krishna. Yeah, okay. So Srila Prabhupada, he waited for Krishna's mercy. He didn't manifest in the form of... wait means he was active in preaching. Srila Prabhupada was active in preaching, but there was no sign for the first almost 1 year that Srila Prabhupada is in America that anyone would take up Krishna consciousness very seriously. Even when Srila Prabhupada first made his first initiations, I think there were 11 devotees, but they didn't... they weren't really committed followers or serious followers. Prabhupada was, by initiating them, he was trying to just almost forcibly bring them into devotional service. They had no... they didn't have anything of the vision that Prabhupada had. Eventually, things developed. So the success in preaching, it's not likely to... it's not that you just go and speak and then people come and everything. It requires a lot of commitment over a long time. Strongly speaking is an essential component, but so also is tolerance, giving time to people, lot of time. Srila Prabhupada put a lot of time into many devotees. Many of them, they just went away. They came up, they seemed to be very committed. After some time, they went away. But Srila Prabhupada, he didn't become discouraged. So the real aim in preaching is not so much to engage our own nature, but we have to see how we can bring people into Krishna consciousness and help them advance. By the nature of the conditioned soul is not to be humble and tolerant. Trinadapi sunichera, tororapi sashana. But that is required if one is going to preach. So if as a result of our preaching, people don't change, maybe we have to make some change in ourselves also. If we can't make them change, maybe we need ourselves to change. If strongly speaking, yeah, should be done. But we don't become like, just like you go to some temples. We were recently in one important holy place. And some of the temple, we're visiting some temples, and some of the places, the temple priests, they just, you don't want to, you don't feel like coming back, because put money here, none of that. And you just don't feel the devotional mood. So big temples, in ISKCON also we're building big temples, but the temple in itself won't make people Krishna conscious. We need devotees who others will be pleased with. They'll want to come back. Even if the temple is very beautiful, you won't want to come back. If the devotees don't make you feel that you want to come back. Within the early history of ISKCON, there are many good preachers. One of the most, we could say, successful preachers, probably the most successful preacher in making devotees in America, was Tamal Krishna Goswami. He was a very tough person. He's remembered for being tough. No one will deny that he was tough. Even there are devotees who are very strongly attached to him. Of course, he's passed away now. But even they would say he's very tough. So he was able to be tough, and he actually turned quite a few devotees off. But there are others who are very loyal to him, and very much appreciated. Certainly Srila Prabhupada very much appreciated his service. So that's one kind of personality. Srila Prabhupada engaged his personality, very strong, in some ways unyielding personality. Srila Prabhupada engaged that propensity, and he was very good in management matters, bringing people to Krishna consciousness almost by the force of his personality. But at the same time, he did leave some devotees upset and this and that. The two devotees from the early days of ISKCON who are, they also made many devotees and they're very much loved, were Jayananda and Vishnu Jan Swami, to the extent that another of our god brothers, Vyaski Prabhu, is, he's finished the first part of a three-part biography of both of them, because so many devotees remember. They're very, very sweet persons. Not that they were compromising in philosophy at all, or practices, but devotees remember them for their sweetness. So we can't imitate Tamal Krishna Maharaj, his unique personality, did unprecedented service. Nor can we imitate Jayananda Prabhu or Vishnu Jan Swami. But we can see they're very different kinds of persons who performed great service, but especially Jayananda and Vishnu Jan Swami, they're very much remembered, they're very much loved by the devotees. And then another example I'll give is of Bhakti Pradeep Tirtha Maharaj, who was he was actually a disciple of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was the first sannyasi disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was very strict. But the devotees who served under him as brahmacharis, they were afraid of him, but at the same time they very much appreciated him, because they appreciated that his strictness was not just some manifestation of his personality but he actually cared for them. His strictness was to bring them up in devotional life. So they very much appreciated that. So if we have a propensity to be very strict and very strong, of course, that can be used in devotional service, but we have to be careful that we don't do so in a manner that it's perceived that we're just indulging our own egoism. Devotees or even non-devotees, they have to feel the care, the concern. Why is this person becoming so strong? Because they're concerned for me. They want to improve me. They want to benefit me. Okay, that's all I have to say at this point. Hare Krishna, are there any questions about this, please? Questions, comments, protests? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Yeah.
Bringing people and making them dedicate their lives in Krishna consciousness. Purity is also a very major factor. So.
Purity is the force, yeah. And of course, this is all discussed in that book, this on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. Yeah, one has to practice properly, then he can preach. Otherwise, it'll be a farce. Mm.
Some devotees emphasize purity, that is, developing personal purity over preaching methods, whereas other devotees tend to stress more on preaching methods and say that purity will follow as you preach.
Purity will follow as you preach, and others say first you become pure and then you preach. Well, both things are there. It's another of those chicken and the eggs kind of questions. One should preach and follow properly, both things. But proper following to some level should be there. Although, yeah. It may be that someone preaches to us, they themselves are not on the level, but they get us started. Just like Dhruva Maharaj's mother herself, there's no record that she was strictly following. She didn't become his instructing guru, but she gave him the indication to take up Krishna consciousness. Again, it's discussed in that book, that's the On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. All right, Hare Krishna, I've finished that. I know, one more question? Yeah.
Most often it happens like we post higher level, like we used to dress much like, better way, like we look like a devotee, but our standard might not be the same. Our false propensity to propagate ourselves as a better one.
Our propensity to propagate ourselves is better than we actually are. Yeah.
What would be the end result? Like, what will, like, how it will end up?
If we. Well, there's cheating in which we pretend we're on a high level, but actually we're indulging in wrong activities. That's one thing. On the other hand, we should act on a better level than we feel. Because in our mind, there may be calm, crowd, lobe, and all these things. Pretty much every devotee is still all his. But we don't act on the basis of that. We should act as a devotee. But in the mind still, the calm, crowd, lobe, all these things may be going on. We don't show... Well, in my... I have all these desires, but we don't act on them. That doesn't mean we're free from them. So it may be that we look better on the outside than we actually are on the inside. But that doesn't mean that, well, what can repression accomplish? Okay, I'll just indulge my lust, greed, and anger. No, we have to control this. And then we have to be honest also. We have to say, yeah, well, I'm trying to be a devotee, that's all. Generally, one shouldn't say, well, I'm a devotee. Generally, one should say, I'm trying to be a devotee, trying to serve the devotees. Okay, let's finish there. Hare Krishna.